Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Welcome to Small Business Digest on Blog Talk Radio. Now entering its fifth year, this show is hosted by Don Mazzella, Editorial Director of Small Business Digest. Each week he brings you advice and information from experts and small business leaders like yourself. Each show is designed to provide one or two thought-provoking ideas from authors, experts, and small business leaders, just like most of the individuals who make up our audience. Whenever possible, Small Business Digest tests the products and services featured on the show to ensure they are of a quality to help listeners grow their small business. Guests do not pay to appear, but are chosen for their ability to provide ideas and suggestions to improve operations, expand marketing, reduce cost, enable better personnel management, and add profits. Remember, all of our shows are archived at www.blogtalkradio.com/smallbusinessdigest. You can hear this show and all others at your leisure. If you like what you hear, tell others about the program. If you have a question or suggestion, email us at editor@is-incorp.com. Should you want to join us on this program during our live hour each Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, dial 646-929-2337. That's editor@is-incorp.com or 646-929-2337. We're only as good as our guest and audience make us.
You know, with introduction like that, it's hard to keep up such a great introduction. But anyway, this is Don Mazzella. We're waiting here for our first guest, Jason Metcalf and his wife, Rita. We thought we would have them on in anticipation of Mother's Day, which is just a week and a half away. They're a mother-daughter team in small business, and we're waiting for them. In the meantime, I thought we'd also talk about National Small Business Week, and actually a month, but the main week begins this coming Monday. In honor of that, we intend to have a program next week that I think all of our listeners will enjoy. Over the past few years, I've looked at almost 120 businesses in order to be on this program. In many cases, it involved individuals with extremely interesting businesses and interesting stories. Two of those businesses will be on next week, and I hope you will enjoy them. In the meantime, we're going to wait for Jason and his mother, and I'm going to devote what is the worst thing in all of radio, silence, because here they are. Jason,
hello.
Are you on?
We are.
Jason and Rita, are you on?
Yes, we are.
Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
First, we're talking with Jason Metcalf and his mother, Rita. And before we do anything else, tell us a little bit about yourselves, starting with Rita. Rita, what's your background?
excuse me. I have a background in, I owned a couple salons. I've owned dry cleaners. I also helped start a chiropractic office. So I had some business experience before I ever got into scooters.
Okay. So you have a scooters coffee shop. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. What is a scooters coffee shop?
We actually own 14 of them.
Wow. You know,
14 of them here in Lincoln, Nebraska. Yeah.
Well, where are you located?
It's in Lincoln, Nebraska. It's a coffee franchise based out of Omaha, Nebraska, which is about 45 miles just east of us. And predominantly a drive-through based coffee business.
Really? Well, but what makes you unique? The coffee blend? The drive-through? Well, you've got 14 of them. Obviously, you must be successful. But what makes them successful?
I think the model is really good. It's we built a 500 square foot drive-through model that doesn't have any seating. So some of our stores have, you know, the 2,000 square foot walk-in drive-throughs. We have one inside of a hospital, one in a mall. But the model that's unique to Scooters is a 500 square foot drive-through that captures the peak hours, which are 7 to 10 a.m. And it's inexpensive to build. You can plop them down in places that you wouldn't have otherwise been able to build a full coffee house. And you can target the drive time to work for folks without having to have the big expense and the huge labor costs.
So what do you do the rest? Well, obviously, your drive time. But what do you do the rest of the time of the day?
You remain open, but in the coffee business, the peak hours are the 7 to 10 a.m. And so the rest of the day, you still do business. But it's like opening a restaurant. You want to make sure you're busy on your lunch and evening hours. Well, in the coffee business, the majority of your sales are before noon. And so you want to put yourself on the correct side of the street, make sure you're visible and accessible. And that's what the kiosks allow you to do, to fit into places that you probably wouldn't have been able to do in terms of, like, in front of a Walmart shopping center or a big anchor, you know, where you couldn't build a large strip center building. You can build one of these kiosks.
Well, you say an interesting word, the right side of the street. Like, for instance, going into town because it is the peak time. Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, typically, you know, you tend to think of people as ants, to where they take the same road to work every day. You have the right, it's easier for folks to take a right turn and then a right turn back on the street instead of crossing traffic. So you think of the right side, in other words, the correct side of the street would be the most accessible, where you can make a right turn, go into the coffee store, get your coffee, make another right turn, and continue on your path down to work. So most folks take the same path the same day to work, so you want to make sure that you're easily accessible to them.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I never thought about it, but it's so logical, but I never thought about it, and that's so true. And how did you decide on your first scooter?
Well, Scooters was just starting to franchise when we started with the company, and they had already started a location in Lincoln, the downtown area, and so we just purchased that from them, and that was our first one, but it was one that Scooters had already started, and then we just went on from there.
Scooter, is it a coffee blend that attracts people? Is it the convenience? What is it about it that makes it so successful and made you so interested?
Well, our theme that we go by is, you know, making the experience amazing. We are heavy into customer service. And, of course, quality. All the products that we use are, you know, the top of the line, the highest quality you can buy. And so our drinks are exceptional. And our coffee is amazing. We right now we're getting it through, what is it, Jace? But anyway, we just feel like that we just have a great product with amazing service fleet and amazing fast.
Well, you know, I just happened to read while I was waiting that the International Coffee Show is going on in Seattle right now, and it's all about technology and how you can now brew the coffee you want electronically, and in some cases, not even ever touch the coffee until you pull out the cup. I found that interesting, and America is a land of coffee drinkers, obviously, and you're into it. What do you are you seeing an increase in coffee, a decrease? What are you seeing as trends in coffee in your area?
I think the same as what's going on in our area as it is national. I'm 38 years old, and the first time I had a cup of coffee was out when I was in college trying to cram for a chemistry test. And you know, 20 years ago, that was the drink of the old people. That was the drink of your grandparents. And today, what you're seeing is you're seeing high school and junior high kids in our drive-thrus drinking the specialty drinks, and you know, you're seeing the baby boomers with a discretional income that are able to buy those drinks that will never go back to the cheap Folgers. And you're seeing the young professionals do it. It's almost becoming almost a status symbol to carry a specialty coffee drink. But at $2-3, it's affordable to everybody. And so what you're seeing is you're seeing the demographic open up to where it transcends race, it transcends, you know, age, it transcends income level. It's really difficult to find our target demographic because so many people drink coffee and can afford $2 or $3. So I just had that conversation this morning when we were talking about downward trends in the economy to where, you know, if something happens, you're probably not going to buy a new car or remodel your house, but women most likely will probably still buy makeup, and smokers will smoke, and drinkers will drink, and people who drink coffee won't give that up as well. So it seems to be pretty recession-proof.
Well, before we go on to mother and daughter, which is what mother and son, which is why we're here, I'm going to ask you another question. People are spending prime dollars for frappuccinos and all that other stuff. Are you finding that a case, or is it still a plain old coffee cup that wins customers?
A large percentage of our sales are specialty coffee. And I think people, I don't think people have a problem spending that, obviously, because it's just a moment in the day, and it's a few minutes in the day where they can treat themselves and have, you know, a special experience for a very little amount of money. And I think that's been one of the benefits of this business, too. Because it's just your little escape for a little bit that, you know, you treat yourself. And it's growing incredibly.
Well, that's the case. Do you have a website for your particular group of stores?
No, we just subscribe to the scooterscoffee.com. We've been in this for... Go ahead.
No, you first. You're the guest.
I was just saying that we used to have Facebook accounts and Twitter accounts for the stores, but with all the franchisees that we have now in the system, it makes it difficult to control that. And so they eliminated social media for the individual stores and routed it up to the corporate account.
Well, an email just came across my desk from a listener that asked the question, do you do special promotions or buy 10 coffees and you get the 11th free or anything like that?
We ran a promotion for a couple of years where anytime you load a $25 gift card, you get a $5 gift card free. But they ran into tax problems in certain states where, like in California, I believe, our stores had a gift card under $5, I think, was the same as cash, or it was $10, the same as cash. And so they cut that program to keep it consistent throughout the country. But we do punch cards. We do random specials, but they're all being routed now through a mobile app that we just created. And you can get that on the App Store. So they can push coupons. They can push drinks. If you're in a certain zip code and they know that you're close to a Scooters, they can send you a coupon or a free drink. So I think moving forward, that's going to be the majority of the loyalty.
When you say that, are you talking about the franchisor Scooters?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
Okay. Now, let's go. Another reason why you're here. A mother and a son in business together. And I know I've had three or four emails when I've had you on the program. How does it work? Are you equal partners? Let's start with the first question. Why did you decide to go in business together?
I was always going to be a chiropractor, and that's what I went to college for. And I got married, and my wife was an Olympic athlete, and we were traveling across the world following her athletic career. And my mom stumbled upon Scooters. There was one in Omaha that she ran into, and she had always wanted to get in the coffee business. And so she called me and asked me if I'd partner with her. And, you know, that it would be a short-term thing. And as soon as Nancy, my wife, was done with her athletic career, she would buy me out and I would go on to chiropractic school. And so Nancy's career kept picking up, and she continued to play. And so we kept opening coffee stores. And you know, honestly, the business was too good, and we love what we do. And so I just never looked back. I never went back to chiropractic school and just stayed here in Lincoln. And that was 12 years ago.
Well, what career did your wife have?
She was a volleyball player.
Ah, well, that's interesting. So if I sum it up, you went in for one thing and ended up being so successful, you couldn't leave it.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm.
But now,
we love what we do.
Well, that's an important thing. But how do you divide up the decision-making?
She makes the decisions, and she tells me exactly what to do every day.
It's real easy. It's real easy. Yeah, when we signed the papers, Jason got there first and appointed himself president. So he's the one that makes the decisions.
Yeah.
I'm just the one doing the books and taking out the trash.
Sure.
Mm. Well, go ahead,
no,
please.
We talk about everything. You know, expansion, hiring, staffing. You know, there are very few days where we don't see each other, and multiple times throughout the day. So we're constantly talking about it. And most of the decisions that we make from this point, once the store is open and operational, are small things where, you know, replacement of equipment or, you know, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but nothing that one person couldn't handle. And so we keep each other abreast on what we did and what we decided, but the major decisions we come together and talk about, if it's hiring of managers or if it's, you know, building a new location or remodeling or those kind of things, we just kind of sit down and talk through it.
Well, it's interesting, but when you do have disagreements, how do you settle them?
We've never really had any disagreements. Sometimes we have different views, and we just talk about them, but it's never been a disagreement. We've never, ever had a fight. You know, never felt like we wanted to walk away. That's just never been the case. We've just been very fortunate and very blessed.
I think what allows that to happen is we both want each other to succeed. And I don't think there's any amount of money that should come in between a relationship. And so early on in this company, when I was traveling and was overseas with my wife, you know, my mom took care of everything and she managed it and wouldn't take a salary for that. She just said we're 50-50 partners, and you know, there's going to be some times where you're pulling more weight than me and I'm pulling more weight than you. But if we get on that kind of foot where we feel like we have to be compensated for everything we do, this is going to be a battle. And so I think she set the precedent from the very first year of, you know, there's going to be overlap, and that's ultimately what happens in the deterioration of partnerships, is one thinks they're doing more than the other, or the expectation becomes there. And so if you have the mindset of where you're both going to plug in and you're both going to work hard, then you know the other one's going to be working equally as hard, and you don't let the small things get in the way.
You know, obviously you want to make money in your business, but part of this has been the adventure too. You know, we really enjoy the growth process. We both love growing and possibilities. And so I think that, you know, that's what gets us excited too, is the possibilities of what's next. In reference to what Jason was saying, I remember we were probably in this about a year, maybe a year, a little bit longer, and something came up with, it was a question of, there was something about money, and I remember telling Jason that, you know, it was just a feeling I had, and we have always been very close, and so I was concerned, you know, going into business that this would, you know, do something to damage our relationship, and that's the last thing that I would ever want. And so, you know, I just said, and we both agreed that if the money isn't the issue here, and if there was ever a problem on that or any uncomfortable thing, that, you know, I would back out and he could go or whatever, because we treasure that relationship more than anything.
That's really great to hear. Another question. Do you have any other children besides Jason?
Yes, I have a daughter.
Ah.
She's in Kansas City.
Ah. But she's not in business or in a business with you.
No, she's not.
Ah. It's always interesting. So... it's always interesting with family dynamics. Based on your experience, what would you tell our audience are the three things that you learned about running a business that you would like to pass on to our listeners?
I would find something that you're really passionate about, and then go all in. I think a lot of times people say they want to start a business or they want to get into a career, and they put their feet in the water and they put a toe in the water, and they're kind of half in, but they'll never be successful unless you're going to jump with both feet in and go all after it. So I think that's a big mistake people make in whatever they do, if it's owning a business or a school or... So that's the one thing I think I'd tell them. The second thing is that you can't be afraid to work. You know, sometimes you get into this and you think you want to own a business and you think you're going to sit and just boss people around, or you have no idea what it is. I think you have to be prepared to roll your sleeves up and learn the ins and outs of whatever it is that you're involved in, and not be afraid to work. I think those are the two things. I don't know about a third.
Is there a third thing that we've always believed in is treating others as we would treat, as we would want to be treated ourselves. You know, in a business like this, you all have your jobs. You know, there's the boss, there's the workers. You know, all different, a lot of different moving parts, but none of those work unless they're all working together. They can't work independently of each other. And so so we've always wanted to feel like our employees are every bit as important to this business as we are. And I think most of our people have always felt that way, that we're never above them, we're equal with them, because we can't do this without them. And so we've really tried to be fair and treat them like we would want to be treated.
That's absolutely great advice. We're talking with Jason Metcalf and his mother, Rita, who own a group of coffee shops called Scooters Coffee in Lincoln, Nebraska. Any other place besides Lincoln?
That's the only places that we own them. Scooters has I think there are about 175 locations across the country, but we only own the ones in Lincoln.
Okay, but in the Lincoln area, they work well together, and I think they're very appropriate guests for us as we anticipate Mother's Day, which question for you. Do you have special sales for Mother's Day at your Scooters location?
I don't think there's a discount going on this year. In past years, we've handed things out or flowers or I think one year we did a discount on Mother's Day, but this year I think it's just a typical day.
I asked the question simply because someone sent an email across. Jason and Rita, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been fun, and we're so happy to see a mother and a son getting along so well. It's great news.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And have a good day.
Thank you,
too. Blog Talk Radio.
Our next guest really brings a subject that several people have asked about in recent weeks, and when I happened to hear about her, I thought it would be an excellent opportunity. Laura McLeod has a fascinating career, which I'm going to ask her right now to talk about. The subject really is managing hourly workers, and hopefully at the end we'll talk a little bit when we decide we have to separate from them. Laura, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Don. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, Laura, as we do with every guest, tell us a little bit about yourself personally before we get into anything else.
Sure. I originally came to New York, which is where I live now, to pursue a career as an actress and a dancer, which I was relatively successful in, which I enjoyed quite a bit. And in the meantime, while doing that, I also spent many, many years as an hourly employee. I worked as a bartender and a server in a large Manhattan hotel. And later on, I took that experience and I went back to school, got my master's degree in social work and a license to be a social worker, and I combined the two. The way I did this was I had realized that in all my many years serving drinks and serving people, that the group of hourly employees, we had a lot of issues that were social work type issues. It had to do with communication and grudges we were holding and personal things that were stopping us from really being happy at the workplace and doing a good job. And I took that work and combined it with my social work expertise and took it into the workplace. So the idea is that my company is called From the Inside Out Project, and the idea is to take things from the inside rather than the outside, just the outside general training, which is, you know, smile at the customer, be kind, you know, do your job. And so that's where I am. That's where I am with my work.
That's fascinating. Well, you know, most small businesses start off with the founder, and then maybe one or two employees, and then grows. And
yes.
because it is such a small environment, whatever problems are magnified because you can't spread them over a lot of people. So now, having said that, the floor is yours, Laura. Tell us more.
Thank you. Interesting you bring up, yes, that in a small company, small business, obviously you start with a founder, then you build and build and build, and maybe the outside you're building to isn't that huge. So you're absolutely correct that these problems magnify. And what I've found is, so you have basic problems with an hourly employee. Maybe he or she's not serving the customer in the way that you'd like. A receptionist is not, you know, performing in a way that you would like the business to be represented. And oftentimes the reaction to that is simply to discipline or say, you know, you have to smile more or you need to do this or that or the other thing. And, you know, sometimes that's fine and that's enough to, you know, sort of remind people of what the point of the job is. But sometimes it's deeper than that, and it's bigger than that, and just telling them or disciplining doesn't really work. And that's what I've found in my own personal experience often and out there. And it's also not just hourly employees, because it's not a vacuum, you know, especially a small business. You know, the receptionist is directly connected to the vice president and the sales managers and whoever else is involved in the company. So those relationships are key.
Well, let me just stay on the receptions for 1 minute.
Sure.
Often he or she, and increasingly it's a he in the world today, is the first contact someone has with the company.
Exactly.
And it's so important to make them feel that. But at the end, if they're not happy or the they can really ruin prospects and everything. How do you deal with that?
That's you've hit the nail on the head really with all of that, because you're absolutely correct. A receptionist is a key person, and also in other industries, there'd be other people who are key. The greeter, in a restaurant, the front desk at a hotel, anybody who's the first person to contact the customer or potential customer. And in answer to your question, I believe that, again, so let's just stick with the receptionist, and the receptionist is not happy for whatever reason and is taking that out in a way on the guests and people coming to the desk. I think it's important to try to discover what the problem is. I mean, it depends on, of course, your relationship, but hopefully you have a strong enough relationship to be able to say, like, hey, you know, I'm noticing that Jane, Joe, and Sam have had a bad experience with you, and I'm you know, I don't know, was there an issue with them? Or as opposed to what often happens is this sort of hard line that bosses take, which is the customer's always right, and I got X, Y, and Z complaints, and you've got to be wrong. And I happen to know from being on that other end of the customer service, the customer's not always right.
Absolutely.
Employees absolutely value when you come at them with a question like, hey, we got this complaint from Jane or Joe, and I'm wondering, you know, because you're doing a great job, and what's up? So, and then looking at it in terms of, oh, is there an issue with this person, or is it, you know, a problem we need to worry about with you?
Well, you look, okay. You know, the funny part is many employees can't deal with positive feedback.
Tell me what you mean by that. That's interesting.
Well, you know, I make it a point, if I get good service, to tell them, and sometimes to tell the boss.
Yes.
And it's amazing the reaction of people to it.
Yes.
When you ask to see the boss, their immediate reaction, uh-oh, you're going to say I did something wrong.
Exactly.
You know, and then the second reaction is, well, why did he do that? Because good service is rare today.
Yes.
And if you get good service, let me put you a little bit on the spot.
Sure, go ahead.
Increasingly, we're in a diverse workforce. We're diverse by age, and we're diverse by culture.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you deal with that?
That's a tough one, and it's very important. I talk a lot about this. I think it's very important to not so much. I guess I don't want to pan any kind of diversity training or sensitivity training or these types of things. They're okay. I've gone through them. I've been, you know, in the position of having to take them and what have you, but it's a bit different, frankly. I think the solution to that or the way to address that, I think that has to do with really getting down to the specific people and their group. So, for example, you have a group of coworkers, they're waiters or they're work in a restaurant or they're, you know, office employees that all work together, and there are a variety of ages and cultures, and there seem to be some issues around that. I think it's about really stating what you're observing and like, hey, you know, it seems that we're having an issue with Jane, who's been here for 25 years, and Joe, who just got here and he's 25, and, you know, let's work that out, because not just work it out, but Joe, who's 25, has got a lot to offer Jane, who's been here for 25 years, and Jane and the reverse, and to not use that opportunity, I guess that's what I'm saying, to take that conflict, observe it, and say, hey, whoa, you know, I'm wondering if we can sort out what the issue is here, and then let's see how we can benefit from each other, because, you know, as I'm sure you know, there's tons to be learned from someone who's been around for a long time, and the opposite of someone brand new with more interest in technology and variety of other things, new ideas, etc. So I think it's about observing, seeing that, and not just seeing it as a, oh, we got to have a sensitivity training now because, you know, Joe doesn't understand, but looking at the specifics of it and saying, hey, what can we get from each other? And how can this also benefit us, meaning Joe and Jane and the rest of the coworkers, in going forward, in being happier, being more productive? And, you know, isn't that the hope for everyone at the end of the day, to enjoy your work day rather than dread it?
Well, you know, you that's a very interesting point, and it's the older people feel resentful of the younger people.
Yes.
And the younger people have no use for the older people because they don't know what they're talking about.
Exactly.
It's a very funny thing, and we are in an emerging marketplace. I'll go again sideways a little bit because you seem to have some of the answers. I saw a great cartoon the other day of customers ordering their food via an electronic ordering place, and the caption read, "If you want $15 an hour, meet your replacement." And I thought it was a very accurate statement, because and obviously we're having conflict. You can go being on the road as I am. I use a lot of Wendy's and Burger King, etc. And it's amazing the differences in customer service amongst different places. within the same chains.
Uh-huh.
And smaller, and essentially they are small businesses.
Yes.
And I've talked to other people about the subject, and it seems that this problem is accelerating, not decreasing. Do you see that, and how are ways of preventing it?
Well, again, I think it's important to address the specifics of what's going on. So, for example, when I was working as a server and a bartender, this was a union hotel. So you had employees there who had been there for 15, 20 years doing the same job every day for 15, 20 years, whether that's sweeping the floor, bussing the table, attending to the rooms, answering the phone, talking to people at the front desk. It's a repetitive job. People get into a rut. They get sloppy. They get bored. They get disgruntled. And that obviously comes out on the customer. It's not right. It's not okay. It's not the job. The way to go at that, in my mind, is to go at the specifics and sit the people down and talk to them. What's going on here? I know you know how to bust the table and do this, that, and the other thing. What the devil is the issue? Because what managers usually do, they tear their hair out and they're infuriated and they can't let anybody go because it's a union job and all of these things, and they bring in trainers, they bring in consultants to sit us down and explain how we should smile and use the customer's name and upsell the wine and all of these things. We all know that. That's not the problem. The problem is I'm bored and Jane won't tip me properly and Joe is, you know, was rude to me 6 months ago and never apologized, and I'm holding on to these things and I'm disgruntled at home. And again, it's not management's job to do therapy or fix your home problems. But the point is to address, like, hey, whoa, something's going on here. And let's, as a group, let's just throw out what's the issue, what's the feedback, what's going on. And then once you know that, you can do something about it, maybe. Sometimes the issue is specific to management. So, for example, we used to become very disgruntled because we didn't have supplies we needed. You know, we'd say, look, we need martini glasses. We don't have them. So you want me to keep going and keep the smile on my face when I don't have the proper to do my job? So things like that, pretty easily rectified if management knows about it.
Well, we'll turn it around for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a manager may know about it, but do nothing about it. You know, it all isn't always the worker's fault or the worker's problem. It's sometimes the management. How can they? What should they be doing in all of this?
Well, I think management should do a couple of basic things which really help hourly employees to do the customer service job better. One is to be very clear in communicating and expectations. When I say communicating, let's go back to the supplies. So if you've ordered martini glasses and they're not in yet, I get that. That's not, you know, your fault, and that's fine, but let me know that. Listen, Laura, we don't have martini glasses. I'm sorry about that. Use the separate wine glasses. We'll get the glasses by the end of the week, or that's what we're hoping, or whatever. Tell me that. So then I know where I'm going and what I can do. And then make the expectations clear and back me up when you make those expectations clear. So, for example, I worked in a lobby bar, and there was a policy, a hotel policy, that you could not bring in outside food and sit in the lobby bar and eat it. Okay. So someone comes in, and I nicely tell them, I'm sorry, but it's our policy that you can't have outside food in here. And this person gets disgruntled and irate and starts screaming that I'm a platinum member and I've been here 20 times and whatever, goes up all the ladder, and all of a sudden it's okay for that person to eat in the lobby. Now, how does that make me look? Not so great. And now I'm irritated because you told me the policy, you told me to enforce it, and now you've doubled back because some influential customer screamed. Next time, I'm probably not going to enforce any policies. So those two things really help me, if you do them correctly, help me and make me feel like, okay, you got my back, and I can, you know, help you too.
Yes. You know, it's interesting. Just recently, I had a very, for a show, I had pre-registered, but one of my editors hadn't. And the woman at the press room absolutely refused to give her credentials. We have a policy, we don't put names on our stories. And she just would not understand. And it, we had to bring it all the way up to literally the show management. Because she, at the end of it, she was very, very disgruntled. But in this case, she was, I call it the tyranny of the little people.
Yes.
You have people who use their position to really make it hard for other people. And those are the people I really don't like.
Yes, I agree. The story you just recounted makes me think of somebody who has a teeny bit of power and just wants to use it and show you exactly how. And a lack of flexibility. I mean, that's the other thing that's important to instill, that managers can instill in their workers. Okay, so this is the policy, but here's how we can be flexible with it. And in your case, okay, wasn't signed up ahead of time, but all right, that's great, and we're happy to have you. It should be a welcoming thing, not a...
No.
You know,
yes.
It's great, you know.
Well, but we're running into that more and more. Surprisingly, I find that the state bureaucrats are becoming more flexible as private... my experience is with the IRS. I belong on a nonprofit, medical marijuana, and dealing with the IRS has been a pleasure. I know people don't say that much about the IRS, but
that's
they've
great.
Bent over. Yes. Whereas in the private sector, since we're having such an interesting conversation, let me ask one more.
Sure.
Again, it's a little controversial. Harassment, sexual harassment. It is becoming almost a daily occurrence, but it's gotten to the point where I don't know who to believe anymore when I read a story.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you deal with that?
That's really tough. And I guess my first thought is to say... one of the things that I believe is really important to work on with people, and I believe it's connected in this case, in which is specifically what you're talking about, is so people, workers can understand that really the first line of how they want to handle something should be direct with the person involved. So in this case, you have stories, and often what I've found, people use the word harassment, whether it's sexual or personal or whatever kind of harassment. I'm being harassed, and they run down to HR and exclaim their story about this one and that one pushed me or touched me in this way or whatever it is. And often it's not a lie, but it was a misunderstanding. There was something else happening. There's something else that provoked it. There's a lot of layers. As you said, you're not sure whom to believe or what piece of it to believe. And instead of starting with running to file a grievance, a complaint, an official, you know, document, let's try to sort it out with the people directly. And one of the things I think a lot of people, workers, managers, hourly, whatever, struggle with is how to honestly confront somebody and speak about something that may be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And speak about it in a way that, you know, doesn't attack, doesn't scapegoat people, but just says, hey, listen, this happened, and I'm wondering, you know, I don't get it. And have a conversation. Sometimes that conversation eliminates the need for a sexual harassment suit. Now, sometimes that conversation doesn't work and it's not possible, but I've seen so many instances of all kinds of things being blown up into HR and the union and the delegate and this and that, where if you turned around and said to the person, like, hey, this is the deal, this is what happened, you could have probably sorted it out in a couple of minutes.
Well, how true. It's not what you do, but how you handle the aftermath that counts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the fact that a lot of people avoid any aftermath, they avoid conflict at any cost, what they think might be conflict, you know. So to go back to the person or to say to the person, like, hey, you know, what's the deal here, is not an option for them. I don't think they even think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting close to the end, but let me talk about how do you help a person who finally decides this employee must go?
That one is, again, I think that's all about having a conversation with the employee. Because I would imagine that if that employee, whether they're hourly or management or whatever they are, it looks to you, if you're the boss, the CEO or founder or whoever you are, like, look, it looks like Jane is really burning out here, or she's not doing well anymore, and, you know, this looks like this is a problem. I think a direct conversation, again, go to Jane directly, listen, and again, if it's a matter of chain of command, you're going to go through whomever. The point is to say and encourage Jane, like, hey, look, if you're looking to advance, if that's the issue, let's talk about that. Maybe there may or they may not be a spot higher up. If that's the reason things are not going well, or is it something else going on? And look, here's the deal. We feel, again, make it clear, expectations clear. This is what you were expected to do in this position. And we see that, you know, for the last several months, several weeks, whatever it is, you haven't been doing XYZ. And that's the job. So if you're not prepared to do that, we need to speak about having you move on. Because I really feel like there could be a number of reasons why Jane is not performing. And again, it's not about you doing a psychoanalysis or getting into her, you know, personal life, or even accepting if there are outside problems. Because frankly, that's not your, you know, concern. Except to say that Jane may be, you know, again, not able to say, like, hey, I really need to advance, and then maybe there's a collaboration there. Maybe you find a spot for her that's better. Maybe you don't, and she decides to, you know, time to start looking.
Mm-hmm.
So it works for both of you. It's collaborative. It's good for the company and Jane.
Hopefully.
Yes, that's the ideal, of course.
We're talking with Laura McLeod. She's an HR expert. Laura, do you have a website? Do you have a book? How do people find you?
I've got a website. It is www.fromtheinsideoutproject.com. I would love to have a book, which I'm thinking about, and I will certainly let you know if and when it comes out.
Well, please do, because it is... I think there's a book always about better management for small business, because small businesses don't really know how to manage people, and they often learn by trial and error. But that's what we found. It's interesting how many emails I've gotten when I announced you're coming on the program. Well. But thank you again, Laura. Say one more time your website.
Yes, thank you. Laura McLeod at fromtheinsideoutproject.com.
Well, thank you, Laura, for joining us today. And hopefully we'll have you back soon.
Thanks so much, Don. I enjoyed it. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening. We will be back next week with other guests invited to help you, our audience, improve operations, expand marketing, reduce cost, enable better personnel management, and add profits. Remember, all of our shows are archived at www.blogtalkradio.com/smallbusinessdigest. You can hear this show and all others at your leisure. If you like the show, tell others about it. Want to make a comment or be a guest? Email us at editor@is-incorp.com. Your host was Don Mazzella, editorial director of Small Business Digest. Until next time, keep faith with the ideals that made America great, and remember, small business is still the backbone of commerce.